We're in Nesivo Shalom on Parshat Vayishlach, page Resh Chaf Bet. Miyad Achi Miyad Esav. Parshat Vayishlach, Miyad Achi Miyad Esav. Vayomer Yaakov, Elokei Avi Avraham, Velokei Avi Yitzchak, Vigomer, Hatzileni Na Miyad Achi Miyad Esav, Ki Arei Anochi It Oto, Pen Yavo Vikani Eim Al Banim. Yaakov says to the father of his, to the God of his father Avram and the God of his father Yitzchak, he says to Hashem, Hatzileni na, please save me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav. He's coming back now after last week, Parsha Vayetze, he went out, he went to Lavan's house, he got married, he had children, he amassed great wealth, and now he's on his way back to Eretz Yisrael, and as he comes in, he hears that Esav is approaching him with 400 men in tow, seemingly ready to attack him, and he fears this interaction, this reconnection with his brother. That's been, you know, years in the making. He's been away for 21 years. And he's coming back and he's afraid. Well, is his brother coming to kill him? And so he davens to Hashem and he says, Hatzileni na miyad achi miyad Esav. Save me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav. Ki arei anochi oto, because I'm afraid of him. Pen yavo vihikani im abanim, lest he come and kill me. Strike me down, both myself and all of my family and all of my children along with me. Says the Nesivo Shalom, Sarich Beor, Kemosha Amdual Zeb Mefarshim Inyan Omro Bet Pamim Miyad. That the Mefarshim want to understand, what does it mean when he says, save me now from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav? Just say, Miyad Achi Miyad Esav. That it says it both times. Shayad Dai Bomro Miyad Achi Esav. It should just say, save me from the hand of my brother Esav. What does it mean from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav? Seemingly implying two different aspects that are at play here. Miish Lavin, top of the next column. Miish Lavin ha'inyan al derech avodah. What does it mean for us in terms of avodat Hashem? Dinei ketiv vayira Yaakov me'od. It says that Yaakov was very afraid. Vayitzar lo, and it was distressing him. Vayachatzet ha'am asher ito l'shnei machanot, and he divides the people who are with him into two encampments. Vayomer yavo Esav al machane achat v'yikao vaya machane. Next page. Ha'nishar lifleita. He says, this is quoting from the Pesukim, that he was very distressed, and he cut his camp into two. And he said, if Esav comes and strikes down one of the camps, then at least the other one will remain. Top of Reish Chaf Gimel. Hine godel morao v'ikar pachto shel Yaakov avinu haya machmat kochot zrachah. Meaning, what's the nature of his fear here? What does Yaakov have to be afraid of from Esav? This is Yaakov Avinu, the Bechir HaAvot, the choices of the Avot, the one who just produced the beginnings of the Shvatim, 11 out of the 12 Shvatim. What does he have to fear from Esav at this point? Why is he so frightened from Esav that he's davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to protect him? So he says here at the top of Resh Chaf Gimel, Hine Godel Morao V'Ikar Pachdo Shel Yaakov. The tremendous awe and fear that he had, and the main fear and trembling that he had, was because the kochot of the sitra'acha shabao kenegdo b'koach gadol b'yoter, that Esav was representative of the powers of the sitra'acha, the other side, the negative spiritual forces in this world that were coming to attack him in the form of Esav. Ukefi shamru lo hamalachim she'Esav ba im arba miot ishimo, as the messengers come and tell Yaakov Avinu that there were 400 soldiers, there were 400 men coming along with Esav. V'hainu shekol markavat atuma ba'alach niat akedusha, that all of the legions of tumah were coming to subjugate the kedusha of Yaakov. Esav was coming with his army in tow. The forces of the other side, the forces of tumah, were coming along to destroy Yaakov and to destroy his kedusha. V'lakach vayar Yaakov me'od, and he was extremely afraid. V'inyan vayachat ta'am l'shnei manchanot. What does it mean? Why did he divide the camp into two? Him keneged bet bichinot avodat Hashem. This is in terms of dividing up into two different aspects of avodas Hashem. What is that? Yish machane shel ovdei Hashem shem kulol Hashem. There are individuals who are ovdei Hashem, meaning that they're kulol Hashem. They dedicate their whole beings, their whole lives are completely dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hamit na'arim klil mikola inanim agashmiim v'oskim rak b'torah v'avodah. That totally remove themselves from all physicality, and they spend their whole lives just engrossed, enmeshed in Torah and avodah. V'ukedivei Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai sharmu Chazal. This is like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, where Chazal say, "Al zeh harbe asu ki Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'lo alta biyadam." There's a machloket in terms of how one should live their lives. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says that a person should live his life, he should just sit in Beis Medrash, learn Torah all day, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of everything. And the Gemara reports that there are many who tried to do like Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai v'lo alta biyadam, but they didn't succeed. meaning, and this is a discussion for another time, but meaning for a person to truly be able to simply not put in the avoda in Olam Hazeh, and simply completely dedicate themselves entirely to spiritual pursuits, to mamish live in the Beis Medrash and not work, and not worry about your livelihood, and not worry about your panasa, not worry about taking, not worry about anything. A person can do that. Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu did that. Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu said that other people should do that. And again, the Gemara reports, many people tried, but they all failed. They failed. Because in order to do that, the level of a person's hishtadlus is connected to a person's bitachon. Unless a person truly, truly believes that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will 1,000% take care of them, they deeply believe that, okay, so their hishtadlus is completely minimal. And only if a person really successfully commits themselves to Torah and to spirituality 24/7 does it actually come through. Meaning you have to have both of those ma'alot in a real emistic way, not just like, oh, you heard it and you're going to try it because what could be the worst that could happen? No, you really believe it to your kishkas. That I am somebody who can and will commit myself, my whole being, 24/7 every day to spiritual pursuits, and I have no doubt in my mind that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will figure it out. The money will come, the food will come, the housing will come, everything's going to come. Not I wish that would happen. I know it will be taken care of. Because I know that my emunah, my bitachon is in such a place where my hishtadlus therefore is almost zero. But you gotta know yourself. If you do that and you're playing a game with God, you're going to lose. Nobody's going to win. You're going to lose. If you're somebody who's like, no, I'll commit myself to spiritual pursuits, and like, I read somewhere that God takes care of you, so like, I guess it'll work out, right? No, that means you don't believe it yet. That's not who you are yet. Then it's not going to come through. You have to live it with complete certainty. The balance of bitachon and hishtadlus in terms of parnas is not a simple thing. I often tell the story in a different context. This comes up usually like by the man, the discussion of how much a person needs to put in and how they get out and to what extent they get out. So I mentioned the story before in that context. I have a cousin who lives in, I always miss out on the name. I don't know why, because it's like the very firm community, like right off of Yerushalayim, right out of Yerushalayim, near the Tachana Merkazit. I'm just basing out the name. No, not Ramadish. There's a good guess. No, even bigger than that. The Haredi community that's like right there. No, it's bigger than that. It's like, what are they making? Forget it, never mind. Everything but. It's Mea Sha'arim. No, not Mea Sha'arim. No, not Mea Sha'arim. Mea Sha'arim? No, not Mea Sha'arim. No. It isn't Mea Sha'arim. It's Mea Sha'arim. Such with the Nun. Such with the Nun. I think. I'm literally just spacing out. It's fine. It doesn't really matter. He lives in the Haredi community in Yerushalayim. It doesn't matter. I just can't put my finger on it, and it's fine. It doesn't matter. He's a mechanich, and his whole philosophy of life was, he said, I'm never, ever, ever going to look for a job. Meaning, I don't want to get into looking for more parnasa than I should be spending my time working on if I'm supposed to be focused on avodas Hashem. I'm never going to look for parnasa. But he was in chinuch. He said, but whenever I get a phone call with somebody offering me a job, I assume that it's a Kadosh Baruch who's speaking to me through them, and then I take it. And every time where he's been in a financial difficulty, the phone has rung, and he had a job that he never expected, and he took, and as soon as the phone, and even if he was doing well, if the phone rings and somebody offers him something, he takes the job. He believes that that's where his bitachon and hishtadlus is. That's where he believes that it is. And a person has to know. And he believes it 1,000, he believes everything he believes 1,000%. I disagree with some of the things he believes. But he believes everything that he believes 1,000%. But that's the idea, meaning he's all in on that philosophy. And you watch it happen, it pays off every time. So again, here, but we're talking about way more than that when we're talking about Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu. We're talking about, again, Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu is saying just sit there and you learn a base medrash and don't worry, everything will be taken care of. You have to be Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu for that to work. And many tried and it didn't work. Meaning you have to, because they didn't live up to that. Mishum sha'yitzahara mitgabir b'myuchad etzel anashim dolim lahatil behem machshavot upniyot she'etzlam kikardom lachpor ba. Because the Yitzhahara is dafka trying to overwhelm, to overcome people who are, the greater a person is, the more the Yitzhahara tries to attack them, to imbue them with negative thoughts, to take their mind away from things. and eventually pull them away from where they need to be in order for that to succeed. So that's the attack that there is on people who try to give themselves over completely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'ilu ha-machaneh ha-sheni, the second machaneh, heim ha-ochim b'derech yoter pshuta, those who walk a simpler path. Shoskim gam b'yanei olam hazeh, they both engage them in this world, and they engage in the world to come, meaning they're both focused on spiritual pursuits, but also engage in olam hazeh. V'ovdim l'Hashem Yitbarach b'bet ha-dvarim, heim b'torah ve'avodah ve'heim b'yanei olam hazeh, and they serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Torah and Avodah, but also through this world. U'kimamar Rav HaGadosh ha-magid b'mezrich, as the Magid b'mezrich says, I think he said it a few times recently. A beautiful, beautiful explanation of this pasuk from the Magen Mezrich. He says, "Malah haaretz kinyanecha." So simply it means that the world is full of your things. That everything in the world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Magen Mezrich says, "No, you read it differently. Malah haaretz kinyanecha. The world is full of kinyanecha, ways to acquire you." Beautiful way of understanding that. Not the world is full of things that are HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu owns everything in the world. Mal ha'aretz kinyanecha. The world is full of ways to acquire you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ha'aretziyut me'leah b'kinyanim she'efshar liknotam liknotcha b'hem. That the world is full of things that I can acquire you through them. She'bechol ha'inanim ha'gashmi, through all physical things. Achila, v'shtia, v'chol tzarchei ha'guf. Eating, drinking, all of our bodily functions, all our bodily needs. Yicholim liknoto yitbarach. That a person doesn't, meaning again, two different ways of avoda here. One says, I'm totally pushing away from the physical to create a totally spiritual reality. The other side is saying, no, to go and to engage the physical world, but to embrace and to bring out the spirituality from within the physicality. I'm going to enjoy eating, but I'm going to eat for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm going to enjoy what I drink, but I'm going to drink for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm going to go and I'm going to sleep a normal amount of hours, but I'm going to do it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I go to sleep, I say, hinini muchan muzuman, to go and sleep in order to recharge myself to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu tomorrow morning with greater clarity, with greater focus, with greater excitement. Everything I do in Olam Hazeh, I'm engaging in Olam Hazeh, but I'm utilizing it as it's supposed to be, meaning it's talking about before in the past many times, that the physical world is never meant to be an end unto itself. It's always meant to be a means to a spiritual end. And a person can and should engage the physical world as a means to a spiritual end, including our normal bodily functions, eating, drinking, sleeping, everything that we utilize in the physical world can be elevated as a physical means to a spiritual end. So two totally different drachim in Avodas Hashem here. One is saying I'm moving away from the physical because I want to be totally spiritual, like Rav Shirim Bar Yochai, like his philosophy, and the other ideology of saying, no, I'm going to engage this world, but I'm going to utilize and uplift everything in this world and dedicate it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is somehow embodied, as we'll see, hopefully he'll come back to us, he'll build it back in as we go forward. These were the two machanot, this was the two philosophical machanot that Yaakov divided his camp into. These two encampments, these two ideologies. Yeah.
Where is the original source for the world is full of you? Where does it say that?
Mal'ah ha'aretz kinyanecha is a pasuk.
Where?
Where's the pasuk from?
Yeah.
It doesn't say. I don't remember offhand.
So it's just a pasuk.
It's not just a pasuk. It's a pasuk. Okay. But yes, it's a pasuk. He doesn't quote your words, so I forget where it's from. Tov. Going on, he says, Zeu inyan ha'machane ha'sheni. This is the second camp. They're not rejecting and moving away from all of these physical things. They're intending, their kavana in every physical thing that they do is to bring nachat ruach to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is to bring joy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And about this it says, this is what Yaakov means when he says that if Esav comes and strikes down one encampment, then the other one will still remain. What does that mean? So the pasuk says, how does he understand this? He says, if Esav comes ala machane achat v'ikao v'ya machane nishar l'fleita, dichtiva machane achat b'hea yidia. Hainu ha machane ha-mu'ad yutok nun as. He says, if he comes and he strikes down, not if he strikes down one of the camps. It says, v'imika et, im yavo Esav el ha-machane ha-achat. If he comes to the one camp. meaning indicating that Heyayidia is indicating that it's a very specific camp. He's saying that it's indicating if Esav comes and strikes down the camp, which is the camp. The camp is the one that is more likely to be struck down. Which is the one more likely to be struck down? That's the one that engages both the spiritual and also tries to uplift the physical. Because that's in much greater danger of falling, of being overtaken by the Yetzer Hara. Because, yes, it's tremendous to engage and uplift the physical world. But once you engage the physical world, even with the tremendously pure intent to uplift it, by virtue of the fact that you've engaged the physical world, you're at greater risk to fall into the hands of physicality. So he says, Lo alinu, if Esav comes and strikes down the machane that's more likely to be attacked, the one that is engaging the physical world, then the other one will still remain. Beautiful shot on the pasuk. Kimo shaya chozer maran adonenu marinu v'rabenu b'veit avim zekun alenu b'shem harav hakadosh Rav Zev mi... How do you do his eye with a chapshik? How do you pronounce that? It's a cha? Mi Chevrich. The well-known town of Chevrich. What?
Is it not a cha? I thought it was a cha.
I don't think so. That's where the tzadi.
Oh, right.
I don't know. I have no idea. So, Zatzal. Dikishem. I have to brush up my modern Hebrew. Dikishem sha'al limura Torah. So one of the great rabbis said, and this is the Slonim quoting him. The kishem sha'al limura Torah amru chazal le'olam yasok ba'Torah shelo lishma shemitok shelo lishma balishma. That Chazal say that a person should be osek in Torah, should learn Torah shelo lishma if they can't learn lishma yet. Why shemitok shelo lishma balishma? Because if you at least go and learn even lo lishma, hopefully over time that will come to bring you to learn lishma. Kafu lehefech b'nenei olam hazeh. So this is the opposite when it comes to this world. How so? Shemitoch lishma bash lo lishma. Mitchilahu osek b'em lishma, sheoseh hakol l'shem shamayim, v'achar kach l'nimshach achar na'otav, v'nofel b'shelo lishma l'anat atzmo. Wow, that's really depressing. He said, the idea is, when you go and learn Torah, mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. When you go to learn Torah, you go, even if it's lo lishma, so you go lo lishma, and then eventually you will get to a place where you'll learn lishma, which is the goal. So he says, the Rebbe says, no, if you go into the physical world, just know that it's the opposite. That there, when you go in lishma, you're at risk to become lo lishma. Be very careful. There, the opposite can happen. When you engage the physical world lishma, there it can come to be that you end up walking out, engaging the physical world lo lishma. And we certainly all have experiences in our own lives. Right? You know, you go and you say, you know what, I'm going to do this for the right reasons. I'm going to do this with the best of intentions. And a person goes, engages the physical world, mitok she lishma, ba lo lishma. A person says, you know what, no, I'm going to go to sleep early tonight, and I'm going to re-energize myself, I'm going to recharge myself, you know, I'm going to get up to daven shacharis before seder starts tomorrow, no sleep at midnight to wake up at 7, and then the alarm goes off at 7, you're like, no, just 5 more minutes, and then you turn off your alarm, and you wake up at 9, and you're just ready for your first class, right? So it was mitoch lishma that you went to sleep early to get more hours. Balalo lishma, you slept an extra 2 hours and slept through davening. You know what I'm saying? Like that type of the second, meaning it's not saying you shouldn't engage the physical world. It's just saying to recognize the fact that once you engage the physical, even from a lishma standpoint, you're putting yourself at risk for the lo lishma. That inevitably can happen. And so too in any other aspect of Olam Hazeh. Any other aspect of Olam Hazeh. V'amevin yavin. Tov. V'zeh gam be'or tfilato shel Yaakov. This is also explained the tefillah of Yaakov. V'yomer elokei avi Avraham ve'elokei avi Yitzchak atzileni nam yarachi me'yareisav. So what does Yaakov daven for? He says to the God of Avraham and to the God of Yitzchak, save me from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. Ikar tfilato hayag gam hi aloto machane achat. His main tfila was dafka on this machane, on this concept of engaging the physical and the spiritual, both lishma. Elu sheoskim b'nei olam hazeh, those who engage the physical world as well, lishma. Kivan shem yoter b'sakana, because they're at much greater risk. It's much harder to fall prey to the Yetzer Hara when you never leave the base medrash. It's much easier to fall prey to the Yetzer Hara when you go out and you're dafka trying to elevate the physical world. V'alehem yitpalel Yaakov and that's what Yaakov is davening. Save me from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. That at the beginning it looks like my brother. that you're doing it lishma, the achar kach unofil b'shelo lishma b'chinat esav. Kilo, at first, like, no, this is good. It's connected to me. I'm engaged in the physical world. It's achi, it's my brother, it's part of my family, it's all good. But what does it turn out to be? It turns out to be esav. By the end, it becomes esav. Again, to be careful that when a person goes in, and again, it's totally lishma, you can apply it to any aspect of life. Any aspect of life. I'm going out with a bunch of friends, and and I'll be mechazik them, and I'll add some divrei Torah, and I'll be mechazik my friends, and you go, and you're not careful, and end up, your peer pressure, so you end up at a restaurant that has a heksher that you probably shouldn't be relying on. Right, you were going to the physical world to join them for a meal in order to uplift them. What happens? You go into the physical world, you can get brought down. You go out and you go to a co-ed shiur. Again, not saying these things are bad. You go to a co-ed shiur at Leber Yudz, and you're good.
Thank you.
You sneeze, something is true, so hopefully you'll end up going and meeting good guys in the near future. Okay, so you go to meet a good guy at a shiur where there's guys and girls there, right? And again, lishma, you want to get married, you want to start a Jewish family. Again, you have to be careful because the guy who catches your eye, the cute guy in the back of the room who catches your eye, so you decide that that's the guy that you want to date. You don't look into him first, and then maybe he's not so firm, but at that point you're already, you're head over heels firm. You decide, no, he's got to be the one. And then suddenly it becomes not so clear. Or maybe lo alinu, somebody not in this room, somebody compromises on Sherman Agir, whatever the case may be. Meaning a person can, somebody in every way, in sleep, in food, in Beit Ish Lisha, I mean, again, pick whatever you want in the physical world. A person goes into the physical world, and a person goes and begins to engage the physical world, that's when things can start to go off track. A person say, a person goes to look something up, wants to clarify something, goes to look something up on the internet. And then an ad pops up on the side, and suddenly it's 3 hours later, and you missed two siddurim because you don't know where the hours went, and you're not sure what you clicked, you're not sure how you got there, and you're not sure even how 3 hours passed, because it felt like 15 minutes. But suddenly, again, once you touch the physical world, it's very easy for it to be pulled to the Shalom Lishma. And that's why he's davening more for this aspect. Again, the Nisibo Shalom says in so many places that a person needs to engage the physical world, that the greatest levels of Avodas Hashem is when you go and you uplift the physical world. This is not claiming that a person is supposed to be like Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. That's, in my understanding, based on everything else that he said in his Evo Shalom up until this point, and beyond this point, he's not advocating not to engage the physical world. But he's emphasizing here, through Yaakov, through a Hasidic approach to what's happening in this tefillah of Yaakov, and between Yaakov and Esav, he's emphasizing that yes, in so many pieces I've said, that you should engage the physical world and dafka uplift the physical world and find the spiritual within the physical. That's wonderful, but also recognize even Yaakov Avinu was frightened over the fact that once I begin to touch the physical, it's so easy to fall into that trap. It's so easy to begin to slide down and end up going in lishma but coming out lo lishma. At the beginning, it looks like achi. It's beautiful kosher food. Great guy who you think you might want to marry. Good few hours of sleep in bed. It looks like achi. And it turns out to be Esav. Turns out to be Esav. Watch out for the redheads. Could be Esav. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I was talking about the boys anyway. Continuing on. Two lines in. Top of the next column. Top of the next column. Odi yesh lavin, next paragraph. Odi yesh lavin bikfelut bitfilat Yaakov miyad achi miyad Esav. Another aspect of the doubling of the lashon here of from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. She palel keneged beta machanot aniskarim, that he was davening for both of these camps. Miyad achi mikevan lemachaneh hauskim rak b'torah v'avodah shalehem nitapel ayitzehara b'vchinat achi. So he's saying a totally different aspect here, meaning Odi Shlavin, there's a whole different aspect here. Which is that this aspect of Achi has another face to it. Meaning we talked about Achi as the fact that I engage it for the positive reasons and I could end up with Esav. He's saying a whole different aspect here. That Miyad Achi means, Miyad Achi mekivan lemachaneh ha'uskim rak b'torah v'avodah. That it's mechavein to this camp that's only Ovid in Torah and Avoda. You're talking about the camp that's only Ovid in spiritual pursuits. Sha'alehem nitapel yitzhar b'vchinat achi. That in that way the Yitzhar comes and engages them from an aspect of achi. And here, this is especially for people who are, you know, learning their entire year. You know, this their whole year is about learning and doing Avodas Hashem. Hear what he's saying here. It's a very subtle, frightening point to be aware of and to fight against. That at the beginning, the Yitzhara allows a person to do what they want to do, to learn Torah, to do Tovah in this world, to do mitzvot. La'asok echavsam b'Torah avodah, to do that which they want to do in Torah avodas Hashem. V'achar kach u'matil bahem machshavot ufniot. And once they've let them get into the zone, then the achi of the Yitzhara. The Yitzhara then tries to slip in and tries to drag the mind into negative places. U'kiti'ita b'Torah avod, as the Slon Omer says, b'shem Aron HaSaba G'dol Shmilakovich, Soncha miyad gozezim, that the sheep were immediately sheared. I assume that's a pasuk. That the sheep were immediately sheared. Dine miderech hatzon shemanichim lahem shigadel tzimaram kemoshi shiyoter. That the way of sheep is to allow them to grow out their wool as much as it can. So that way you can just let it totally grow out. And shearing sheep is not simple. It's very hard. It's very arduous. So what you do is you let all of the wool grow out, so that way you can cut it all in one shot once it's fully grown out. V'kach gam darkol de Yitzhara, says this is the same way of the Yitzhara. D'meiniach b'tchila liyudi la'asok b'torah v'avodah, that he lets a Jew first, yes, get into Torah, get into avodah. B'chdesh levasof yitpesenu birushuto al yidei machshavot ufniot, that so that way he can then grab all of it at one time through negative thoughts, through letting one's mind stray. And be able to steal all of the Torah and Avodah that you've done, to steal it to the negative side, to steal it for the Kochot of the Sitra Achra, to steal it all in one shot. We say, no, we should shear it immediately, meaning take whatever we have and take it up and be ma'alet. This was the tefillah of Yaakov. Hatzileni na miyad achi, save me from this being that pretends to be my brother. Al ha-machanesh ha-usha-uskim, tamid b'torah v'avodah, the machaneh that's only learning, that's fully involved in spiritual pursuits, that's completely dedicated to Torah and Avodas Hashem. She'itzahara mevakesh li'tfos otam, that the Yitzharah wants to grab it, al yedei pniot v'ge'ut, through one's mind wandering, and through ego. And it's a very wild thing. Meaning a person goes and they go to Beis Medrash and they're learning. Right, my understanding is more common, it's common in Shana Bet and seminary also, but it's definitely common in Shana Bet and end of Shana Aleph and yeshivas and things like that. You see this all the time. You know, you start to see where people are starting to get into the learning. And again, this could be the same in seminaries, I just am not familiar with it. But once it starts to get into the zone and there's sort of the peer pressure that toward the end of Shana Aleph and certainly in Shana Bet, there's a peer pressure to be from. And you have all these guys who have been competitive their entire lives, who have judged themselves based on their relative status to everyone else their entire lives. In basketball, in trivia, in sports, in athletics, in all whatever thing it might have been, in clothing or whatever style or whatever it is. So then it becomes the peer pressure is to get from. And what you find is that then suddenly, again, this can manifest in many ways. I'm giving one example that I've seen before. You'll get situations like, you know, like guys like jockeying to be like the last guy in the Beis Medrash at night. You know, where it's suddenly like, you know, it's
light.
What?
Turning off the light.
Have you heard of that before? Yeah. That it's like, it's a thing. The fact that you've heard of it means that it's you know, again, that it still exists, which is not shocking, but it still exists. The idea that, you know, like, who's going to be the last guy in the Beis Medrash? And suddenly, you know, it's a game of chicken of like, it's like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. You're not even learning anymore. You're just like looking at the same word of the sefer, be like, no, I'm going to be that guy. I'm going to be the last guy in the Beis Medrash. And then finally, one guy folds, closes the sefer, leaves. The guy waits 5 more minutes, goes. He's the guy who gets to turn out the lights. And the next day is, oh man, I'm sorry, I'm a little tired today. You know, I was the last guy in the base last night, you know, T4. That sense of meaning, what was the whole reason that the guy learned for the last 2 hours? The whole reason that he learned for the last 2 hours wasn't for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was in order to put down everybody else, in order to put himself on a pedestal, in order to bolster his ego. That's not even mitok shalolishma balishma. Lolishma means zero intent. Lolishma means that you have no intent at all. And you hope to have positive tent l'shem shamayim. If you utilize HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah in order to propel yourself forward, in order to raise your ego, in order to raise your status, that's giving over the Torah that you're learning to the Yitzhahara. That's giving your Torah learning over to the Sitra'achra. It's a very frightening thing. That learning with negative intent, not zero intent, not par of intent, that's lolishma. Davening with learning or davening with negative intent, that gives it all to the Sitra'achra. The guy who goes and the guy or the girl goes, this I've seen by both. The guy or the girl who goes, you know, like shuckling like a lulav for like 20 minutes, Shmona Esrei, like the imamish, you know, like they're so into it. The place that it made me, that it made me the most crazy, there was, I mean, y'all can put it together, but there was a particular camp that has a lot of from guys and a lot of from girls post Shana Aleph. And it was a very big sticky thing that made me crazy. That after breakfast in the morning, we'd all take the campers out. There were always like 20 girls standing on a steep incline right in front of the doors to the Chadar Ochel. You know, davening Shacharis like it was like they were like their lives depended on it, because in their minds it did, because the Shana Christ they might get married. I understand, fine. Like their lives depended on it. I don't know if a single word of tefillah was ever said. There's a base medrash down the road. Also, flatter ground on the other side of the Chadar Ochel. You don't need, like, they were like holding on to like this imaginary, you know, rope so they wouldn't just fall over and tumble. You know, and it's why are you there? Like, why daven on the slope, on the incline in front of the doors? That's shelo lishma. That's negative intent. God didn't give you tefillah so you could get a boy. Like, that's not how it works. I mean, and there's so many different manifestations of that. That's something that, I guess anybody could figure out which camp that obviously is. You know, like, there's, I mean, like, this was when I was in Shana Aleph in, on the Poland trip, we went on the Poland trip. I remember finding out afterwards, like crazy, that so not only were the guys shtiyot, that the guys and the men, so the guys, girls, and the girls were totally separate going to Poland through this particular company. But they come together for Shabbos in a shul in Poland. There's this old and very beautiful long history of the shul in Poland. And the women's section is on a balcony and the men's section is on the bottom. And so the guys, obviously, suddenly guys, you were like, did you ever daven? Or like davening like crazy? Because the women are on the balcony, the Shana Aleph girls on the balcony. And I found out afterward that there was a rotation for the girls who got to sit front row balcony. There was a rotation Friday night and Shabbos morning so they could check out the guys down there. It's even worse that it's like, it's on Poland. It's on Poland. Like, you just are totally missing the point, right? But this is the upset. But again, this idea that but it's not like a crazy thing. These are two examples of two high profile situations for Shana Aleph and post Shana Aleph people where this is happening consistently. The fact that it's 15 years later and turning off the lights is a thing that, you know, as a Shana better in seminary that guys are doing in yeshiva. Meaning, this is clearly a thing that still permeates our culture. The idea that when you go and you're utilizing Torah and Avodah for your own means, this is what he's saying. He's saying that when you do that, you're giving it to the Sitra'achra. That's really scary. That's something you really want to take to heart. And it comes up also, meaning everybody in this room, you guys are Shanabed. You have no choice. First of all, I have faith in all of you that you will be leaders in your campuses and your Jewish communities. I have faith that that's going to happen. Either way, you have no choice, because as those who stayed longer and learned more, you have a chiyuv to give over what you know when you go forward into the next stage of your life, past Shanabed. But when you do that, there are going to be opportunities. When you choose that you want to be on a student council or a student board, or you're doing that because you want to be able to say, I'm president of so-and-so, or president of this, or president of that, because you want to get up there to the podium and give the speeches. Are you volunteering to give the Dvar Torah because you want to try to inspire the next generation of Jews? Or do you want to be able to stand there and look awesome that you gave the Dvar Torah at this huge Shabbaton? You gave the Dvar Torah at this event? You gave the Dvar Torah at this, and you know, whatever it is. Or, again, bring it all back together. Give the Dvar Torah in order that guys should notice you. Whatever the thing is. To be really, really careful what your kavanas are. I remember when I was teaching. So I was already teaching because I wanted to. Like I knew I wanted to go into chinuch, and I was already teaching when I was in college. And I was still single when I was in college. I taught in camps to staff. I always prefer teaching individuals who were older. So I taught to staff in camps. When I was in YU, I was teaching. I was giving a shiur once a month at NYU's Hillel, meaning to people who were basically my age or a little bit younger, which was great. Again, just I went down. I said, if you guys want me to do it, I'd love to do it. And Baruch Hashem, they had open slots, and it was great. And then eventually, Rav Sarna was wonderful. He brought me, like, he actively brought me in the last year, which is very nice, officially. But I had a rule. I had a rule. Hard and fast rule, which was, I told you this the other day, yeah. I had a hard and fast rule, which was, I wasn't married yet. I said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have a deal. I'm assuming that any single girl that is in the crowd when I go and teach, by definition, she is not the one. Because I never, ever, ever want to be giving a shiur and thinking about how I'm giving it over because I want to try to impress somebody in the crowd because I'm thinking about maybe I would want to date her. So I knew if she was in the crowd, it meant that she wasn't the one. And lo and behold, my wife was never in any of my shiurim. Never in any of my shiurim. And it was a rule that I never actively violated. One time, I asked to get set up with somebody, and the person who set it up told them to go to a shiur of mine right before we were going to go and go on a shidduch date. So, like, that wasn't really in my control. But literally, except for that one time, which I remember the one instance where it happened, and she wasn't the one, and I should have known. Aside from that one instance, meaning it was a hard and fast rule that I never violated, because again, listen, there's certain people, I'm not saying that one can't do this. I said, I don't trust myself. And if I give over Torah, I demand, the same way I demand that the places that I get it from be pure, and I've worked very hard to pick my Rabbeim because I demand that my sources of Torah be pure, I have a responsibility to live that which I believe in, and I want my Torah giving over to be pure. And in case there might be any moment where I ever might think to utilize Torah for my own personal gain, it's Efshar. If the person's in the room, it's not meant to be. And again, I'm not saying nobody told me to do that, I'm telling anybody else to do that. My point is a person needs to be cognizant, self-aware, to really recognize that when you're engaging in Torah, in tefillah, in avodas Hashem, in chesed, I mean, again, we've given examples from all of them now, basically, that sort of gives away the camp, but all of them, you know, of Torah, of tefillah, of chesed, of all of those things. And there are a lot of other stories in that context which one can easily think of or see, and so many situations where people go to, you know, NCSY situations or a house-like situation or whatever it is, where people go and they're doing it, again, for the wrong reasons. And a lot of people do it for the right reasons. There are so many people doing all of these things, obviously. Do I need to say this? They're learning Torah, davening, and doing chesed for all the right reasons. The point is to make sure that you are, because if not, it goes to the Sitra Acha, which is a very, very crazy concept, a very frightening idea, and that's what he's saying here. Tov. Let's take it a step further. We're in the middle of the paragraph. V'ze'ayita tefilat Yaakov. This was the tefillah of Yaakov. Hatzileni na miyad achi. Save me from my brother. Ala machanesh oskim tamid b'torah avodah. He's talking about the camp that's always engaged in Torah and avodah. She'yitzehar mevakesh litfosotam. That the Yitzhar is going to try to grab them. Al yidei pinot v'geyut. That's where we up. That's where we left off. V'ilu ala machaneh asheni. But for the second one, ha'oskim b'inanei gashmim, who are engaged in physical things. Bikesh Hatzilini nami yad Esav. There he just said, save me from Esav. Shebetchilak amaratam l'shem shamayim. Ach levasof noflim b'yad Esav l'hana'at atzmam. Because there you have people who are going in l'shem shamayim, but there they could have fallen right into Esav's hands, meaning fallen into the trap of the physical world itself, literally fallen right into Esav's hands. The achi is the one that tries to pull my good things into a negative space. The Esav, as he's explaining it here, is the person who tries to take my engagement into the physical world and make it physical. That's just Esav. And so he's davening for both, one for each camp. Let's finish the paragraph and I'll take your question. Penyavo vikani imal banim, lest he come and strike me down, both to the mothers all the way to the children. Aim miromeis la machshava. The aim, the concept of ima, is connected to the concept of thought in Hasidic thought. Banim miromaz la masim, and banim are like the actions, meaning the mother is the source, the mind is always supposed to be the source, and the children are the product, the physical actions are the product. So he's saying here that it's the aim al banim is from the machshava all the way to the maaseh. Eitzel machaneh ha'oskim b'torah ve'avoda, by the machaneh, by the camp that's focusing on Torah and Avoda, ikar hitkabrut eitzar machshavot. There it's trying to stray my mind. Meaning when I'm sitting and learning Torah, it can't make my Torah ra. It can't make me do, it's not going to be doing avera in the Torah, but it can poison the Torah. By filling it with gaiva, by filling it with the goal of fulfilling my own personal needs, by utilizing it for my own ends, there it can go and it can poison the machshava and own it that way. La'atil bahem pinot v'geut, in order to have straying and gaiva get into it. Kenegdam b'keish pinyavo v'ikani aim, lest he strike down the aim, the mother, the source, the machshava. V'al banim b'keish ala machaneh ashni, that was lest he come and strike down the ma'aseh. Ha'oskim enenei lamazeh, those who are engaging in the physical world. Shepashut lo yiplu b'masim ra'im, that they simply shouldn't fall into negative actions. Yeah, Danielle.
The whole part, though, that the Yitzhar will just take it all, isn't that not how the Yitzhar works?
He's telling you, yes, it is.
But then what about, like, all those opinions and, like, the Gemara that says that leads to her works like slowly and it like picks on you for like a long time and then finally just attacks you.
I mean, there's the Yitzhahara isn't restricted to one mode of attacking you. It attacks in many, many, many different ways. Also, that could be something which does grow over time. A person goes and he's like, oh, I'll stay a little longer. Sorry, I think I'll stay longer. And he's like, wait a second. There's only one guy left. If I just stay a little longer, I could be the last guy. At the beginning, was it L'shem Shemayim? Yeah. Was the Yitzhahara like, keep going, keep going? Ah, gotcha. Right? You know? Same thing. A guy, you know, a person is like, you know, like, daven a little stronger, daven a little stronger, daven a little stronger. Oh, my Baruch Hashem, my Shmones is doing so well, my Shmones is doing so well. Oh, there's going to be girls on the balcony? Maybe an extra minute. Maybe two. Because I like the other guys. And there's a cute one in the front. Right? Meaning like, that's already, you know, that was my Shana Aleph self. That's how I was trying to play my Shana Aleph self. I actually did that. I thought it was actually ridiculous, but that was me playing the Shana Aleph guy. I tried. Try to inhabit him. Try to inhabit the role. What? Oh, no. I can't. That makes me way too close to yeshiva. So meaning I think that there can be also, even in that instance, you know, versus the guy, you know, the person's like, no, like, everybody's in, like, I'm going to do better than everybody else. And, like, then he, you know, buys white shirts and black pants, and then, like, suddenly he's learning 6 hours of Gemara a day, like when he was learning Netflix yesterday. Like, meaning, you know, like there are guys who make the jump completely. Again, some L'shem Shemayim, some not, and when it's not, then either way. You can do it too fast L'shem Shemayim. It still may not stick. That's a discussion for another time. But there are people who flip L'shem Shemayim and flip not L'shem Shemayim. Even those who L'shem Shemayim have a lot of avoda to do because to flip is very hard to keep. But that's not our topic of conversation. But the point is you could do slow burn for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, and you could do flipping for the right reasons or the wrong reasons. It depends on where you're coming from and not inevitably what your goals are, what your intentions are. Good? Danielle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Last paragraph on this page. Reish Chav Gimel. Uve'odofin. Third way of looking at it. He's giving us many different ways to look at this. Yaakov wanting to be saved, dividing his camp in half, and wanting to be saved from the hands of his brother, from the hands of Esav. Ve'odofin, a whole different perspective, a whole different aspect. Yesh la'avino mro hatzileni na miyadachi miyadaisav. That Yaakov davens to save me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav. Dinei kayadua, ha'klipaha garua biyoter hi iruv tov vara. The worst klipa that there is, the worst negativity that there is, the worst spiritual negativity that there is, a klipa means a shell or a peel. It's used in Kabbalistic terminology to mean that which, like a shell or a peel around me that divides between me and Hashem. It's spiritual buildup that divides and acts as a shell and a division between myself and Hashem. So he says that the worst type of klipa that there is a klipa that's an eruv of tov and ra. That's a combination of tov and ra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu asher bara et ha'or ve'et ha'choshech, et ha'shalom ve'et ha'ra. You have a HaKadosh Baruch Hu who created or and choshech, light and dark, shalom and ra, peace, harmony, and ra, evil, ve'atov ve'ara, and good and evil. V'mikoram kulam yitzirei kapav. Those are all things that were forged by a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. K'mamar ha'katuv, as the Pasuk says, yotzer or v'orei choshech, oseh shalom v'orei ra. That a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, different words for creation that are very important here in terms of the different levels of Bria, Yitzira, and Asiya, Seder for another time, that he's yotzer or, he creates light, uvorei ra, different word of creation, he creates darkness, choshech, oseh shalom, he makes peace, harmony, uvorei ra, and he creates ra. Ani Hashem oseh kolela, I Hashem am the one who created all of these. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates all of these things. Ela shebebriyata olam, hayu atov v'ara nifradim meihim, zeh mizeh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates all of them. But when he creates them, they're all different. When he creates them totally separate one from another. V'lo nivra hara ela b'matara sheyagbiro et hakoach atov al koach hara. And he only created ra for the goal that tov should overcome ra. V'godel pigam eitz hadat, and the greatness to understand the tremendous nature of the destruction, of the damage done by eating from the eitz hadat, tov vara, shekitotza'a mimenu, that as a byproduct of eating from this fruit, nihye eruv tov vara. There no longer is tov versus ra. There's tov enmeshed in ra, and Ra enmeshed in Tov. The two become mixed up one into the other. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates the world, he creates things distinct. By eating from the Eitz Hadas Tov Vara, we bring the Tov and Ra into contact with each other. We mix it into each other. We make them Be'iru. We make them mixed into one another. This gives strength to the klipa. This gives strength to the negative forces in this world. Because the tov is now mixed in with the ra. Next page. The tov is mixed in with the ra. And this is the worst klipa that there is. And only when we get to the days of Mashiach, as you have beror hagamor viyufredu hatov mi'ara, then there will be a complete separation between tov and ra once again. Viyuchal haolam lavo l'tikuno she'et ruach hatum'a avir min ha'aretz, and then the world, the whole world, can get to a place of tikun where the spirit of tuma will be totally removed from the land. Only in Mashiach, when there's a complete separation of the tov and the ra. Chazal say like this in Masechet Sanhedrin: Ein ben David ba ela bedor shekulo zakayu bedor shekulo chayav. And there are many gemarot to the whole. I mean, most of the parak here, half the parak is all about Olam Haba. So there's many different statements here. This is one aspect of it that he says Ein ben David ba. The Gemara says that Mashiach ben David is not going to come except in a generation that's either completely meritorious or completely completely chayav, completely at fault. Meaning, either they're extremely one way or extremely the other way. This seems crazy. That after thousands of years of waiting for Mashiach ben David, is it really going to come to a generation that the entire generation is messing up, is chayav? Why would it come to such a generation? The Mashiach itself is going to come and separate and clarify between Tov and Ra. Ve'ein ben David ba ela lidor bo yihyeh adam o kulo Tov o kulo Ra. And so therefore, according to this opinion, then Mashiach ben David is only going to come for a generation that's completely Tov or completely Ra. Sheshuv lo yihyeh bo iruv Tov Ra, that we no longer exist in this iruv, this mixing up, this combination of Tov and Ra. Rak az yicholim lahavil tikun gamur. Only then can we get the complete fixing of the world. Ach kol zman sheish iruv Tov v'Ra. But as long as there's this mixing together of Tov and Ra, shebegam agaru b'yoter, which is the worst thing that there is, lo yachol liyot ha-tikun gamur, then the final tikun can't come. Right, it's a very, very deep thing. Meaning we live in a world in a post-Eitz Hadat Tov v'Ra reality. There's no longer distinct Tov and Ra. In fact, there's almost never pure Tov or pure Ra. We were talking about it in an extreme case or in a more obvious case. But even in the most subtle of levels, everything that we do, it's something which we need to struggle with in the Chumash Shirim, in the other WhatsApp group, in the Chumash Shirim, we talked about in the beginning of Bereshit, the concept that that once we've made Zahas of Ra, we have conflicting motivations in everything that we do. The example that I give in those shirim, right? Just it's a simple example, and it's just too dafka oversimplified. But a simple example of my Rebbe gives a similar type of example. I don't remember exactly what example he used, but it was something like this. He said, you know, a person goes to the shuk on a Friday, right? You guys were pre-corona last year. You went to the shuk on a Friday, yeah? Okay, so you go to the shuk on a Friday. Now my yeshiva now has this thing. We didn't have it in our time, called shuk schleppers. This is a thing now, right? Yeah, we didn't have such a thing in my day. So you go and you're going to go and you're going to be a shuk schlepper. Is that a bad thing? Is it a good thing? It's okay. I'm right. Am I wrong? That was good. Okay. So you go and you want to be a shuk schlepper. So you go, right? And you see, oh, now I see someone. I go and I take the person's bags and I help them back to their house. Come back Friday night. Go back to the dormitory. Look myself in the mirror. Go like, oh. Spingishana Aleph. I'm like 2 months in. I'm already doing chesed. I'm the man. This is basically all it takes for a man to think he's the man, by the way. Right? I'm the man. I'm told I'm it. I'm God's gift to Judaism. Right? And then I go to sleep, and Friday night, I wake up in a cold sweat. Cold sweat. And I go, oh no. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I wasn't too. I mean, I did help the old lady and I was a shuk schlepper, but like, I mean, I was maybe doing it to impress the really pretty girl that I went to the shuk with. So he was doing it for her and not really for Hashem. Shoot. Right? So then what happens? So the next week, he's like, you know what? That's it. Not invited anybody. You don't have to tell me where they've been going. And he runs the shuk. First guy there. Doesn't want anybody else to be around. Sees somebody. Goes up and brings it back. Comes back Friday night. After dinner, looks in the mirror. Oh, now I'm the man. Now that's it. Now I'm good to go. Goes to sleep. What happens?
Wakes up in a cold sweat.
Why? Because he says, I didn't do it for the girl. I didn't do it to impress the girl because she wasn't there. But maybe I did it to impress myself. Mm-hmm. All right, think about that. And so, again, and the idea there is that, and the way that my reg is that example of just, again, a simple example of that we always have conflicting motivations. And that in this world, in a post-Eitz Hadat Tova Ra world, where the Tov and the Ra are mixed together, the goal isn't just to choose Ra. The goal isn't just to reject Ra. Isn't just to reject Ra. Isn't just to choose Tov. But even when I'm doing something Tov, I'm doing Chesed, I'm learning Torah, I'm davening, to even within the action of Tov, to continuously peel away layers and layers and layers of Ra that surround that Tov. That's the reality that we live in. And that's in every area of our life. Every area of our life. You know, that comes down to, you know, when you're sitting in the cafeteria, what do you, the chadar ochel. When you're sitting in the chadar ochel, I will always have been a JLIC educator first. When you're sitting in the chadar ochel, right? And you sing, you know, and you make a serious strong bracha. And then you have to ask, like, well, I did it because I wanted to have kavana, but did I also do it because, like, I wanted to seem firmly the other Shana Bekel who was sitting next to me? Like, I mean, like, there's always that question of motivation. There's always that question of motivation. I remember, I think I've told this story before. It's like this weird thing that, like, stuck out of my mind. I guess because I was, like, so self-conscious when it happened. You know, one of the first times, like, I was giving shir, and, like, I just needed to take a drink during shir. I told you this before. I just needed to take a drink during shir. And I was totally stumped. I had no idea what to do. Do I face everyone and say it out loud? Do I yell out the bracha because I'm a rabbi and I think that's what you're supposed to do? But then if I'm supposed to do it, why would I do it that way? Should I say it quietly? But then I look like I'm trying to be humble and an anav, but I'm not really humble and I'm not really an anav. Should I turn around? And I was like, I started to overthink it because I had an image in my mind of my Rebbe Rav Amos every single day. In Shana Aleph, I was his shamish, and Shana Bet, his shamish, whatever that means. Whenever I would get his tea, I would take care of setting up the room, but I was like, I would take care of it, make sure everything was set up for him. So I made his tea every time before he came and I brought it to him. So I was more, I guess, cognizant of the tea. And so when he would pick up the tea, he always takes it and he would turn around and face the back of the room. He would face his back to the room, bow his head a little bit, and he would say not a silent, but a quiet, some barely audible, but audible shahakol. And then turn around. And I always understood from that. I never asked him about this, despite the fact that usually these are the types of weird questions that I would ask. I never asked him about this, which is the point was that I'm talking to Hashem. I'm not talking to you, and it's none of your business. And he would turn around, turn his back to everybody else, and say the bracha. So the first time I was like, I mean, I guess, go with your Rebbe, right? And I turned around, bowed my head, and said a little shahakol. And I just felt like pure garbage. I was like, who do you think you are, you egotistical moron who is not Rav Amos, that you're gonna monkey him doing the shahakol like that? You know, like, and, but that's even something as small as like making a shahakol in front of a room. My point is, like, everything we do, there's always conflicting motivations to figure out, are you really coming with Shem Shamayim or not? And we live in a post Chet Eitz Hadas world. It means it's not just, and again, this is such a critical concept, it's not just choosing Tov over Ra. It's investigating, it's deeply contemplating one's own actions of Tov and peeling away layer after layer after layer after layer your whole life, layers of Ra from upon that action of Tov. And it goes on and on and on. In every instance, in every example, back to the shuckling, not even just like we were talking about in front of, you know, girls in front of guys or guys in front of girls. Even in the base medras, even in shul. So always think about it. The other example I give for my other Rabbi of you all, so he stands off in the back of the base medrash. And for years, I was davening in the back of the base medrash because he has a whole Torah, an emes of Torah, to why he always sits, and his makom is always in the table that's the farthest back. Deep Torahs on why he's dafka all the way in the back. And so he's my Rebbe. So when I would started to go to shul after Shana Aleph Shana Bet, so I always sat at the table in the back. Always. And I started to get so frustrated with things, sitting in the back. people are always the biggest hawkers are always hawking in the back instead of davening. And I would be sitting there and davening, and you'd see all the people who were like walk in, you know, like to put on their tefillin at Yishtabach or Chazaras Hashatz. You know, when you're like sitting there and going like, why isn't the world davening normally? Like, why don't we take davening seriously? What do you mean crazy? And I come home and I complain to my wife, and my wife, because she is the voice of reason in life, because certainly not me. Thanks for you guys, I guess. But no, the good news is she's trained me, so I guess I'm passing over her to you, I guess. So she said to me, she was like, why are you davening in the back of the shul? I was like, because Rav Yoel davens in the back. She goes, you're not Rav Yoel. Daven in the front. Put your tallis over your head. Don't look at everybody. Don't see anything. And just focus on your tefillah. And you know what? It works. And to this day, even though I feel, I always feel weird because I feel like people think that I want to daven in the front because I think I'm better than everybody else. And that's always painful because I don't want to give off a negative impression to anyone. Meaning it's problematic to do things that you know will make people think negatively of you. If you know that they're going to think negatively for doing it, it's not so simple to do such a thing. So I daven in the front, and I hate it because I'm like, I know people are going to think like, oh, he thinks he has such a long Shemona Esrei, so he wants to daven in the front because he thinks he deserves to daven in the front. I daven in the front really just because I don't want to hear or see anything except for my sitter and the svarim in front of me or the wall in front of me and nothing else. And I sit there with my tallis on my head from the beginning of davening till the end. From Mode Ani until, you know, Shir Shel Yom. There, I don't want to see or know what's going on. And again, Was I doing it for the right reasons by sitting in the back? Yes. But was it working out right for me? No. And for me, what it was causing was me to be upset with people and frustrated in shul and not be able to daven properly. Again, best of intentions, tarova tovin ra. That's what we're talking about. And then again, even moving to the front, then I had all of these things. Where do I sit? How do I sit? What's the impression of the people when I go and sit there? Of course, every shul that I go to, without getting into it, there's good stories, but they are not meaningful stories. I mean, I don't have enough time. Even if we did, they're not meaningful stories. Every time I walk into a shul, I always go for the front or for a front corner. And every time without fail, I end up sitting in the seat of somebody where it's their makom kavua, and there's somebody who's loud and angry and kicks me out. Every time. And I always do it with l'shem shamayim, and it always becomes a fight. So I'm still struggling to figure out what to do with that. But that's my show. Yeah. I've got some good stories to never tell.
Embarrassing for you?
No, not for, meaning it's embarrassing that they like kicked you out and yelled at you.
There have been some bad ones. And after 15 years of it, you start to talk back. It doesn't end well. So now I try to stick to the same rules in the same spot. I try to make one kavua. And if somebody sits there, whatever. I'm happy to go on a rant about Makom Kavua another time, but it's not for now. So the point is, if I'll say this to you and to everybody listening, because it is a pet peeve of mine, called halacha, which is, if you have a Makom Kavua wherever you are, anywhere that's within Dalad Amos of your space, anywhere that's within 6 feet of your space is still your makom kavua. And if you show up late to shul, or if you see somebody who's new to the shul, or you don't know them, and you kick them out when there was a seat open right next to that person, which is still considered your makom kavua, you are doing no mitzvah, you're doing multiple averas, and learn your halacha well. That's all I'll say on that matter. Not that that's biased at all, but that is the halacha. I'm biased in my intensity about it, but
shots fired.
Yes, if you're gonna, it was whatever.
You just make a sign and like put it over your tallis, like on, like, and then everyone that comes like reads it and leaves you alone.
You've never met guys who go to shul 10 years after Shana before. Signs were meant to be ignored. Signs were meant to be ignored. No, it gets, yeah. There was one guy, there was one seat I sat in, and I got kicked out in the middle, like by Yishtabach, and it was a small little shtiebel. I was in the front corner. There was no other seats left in the shul. There was nowhere to go. Guys, this is my seat. And I was like, I'm out. Like, I left shul and I davened at Hom Yechidus. I came back the next week. And so I left shul. The head of the shul came and apologized to me. Says, there's no makom kavuas in the shul. Whoever said that to you shouldn't have said that. Whatever week you come, you could sit wherever you want. That's fine. So I came back the next week. And because, again, tarova tovin ra, I was like, bedafka. I was like, I'm getting up for that meeting next week. And I'm sitting in that seat. And I'm not moving this time if that's the rule of the shul. No more of the shriyot. So I sat down. I came early, got that seat. And then, lo and behold, in the middle of Pesukei Zimra, somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, you're in my seat. And I look up. And it was a different guy. It was a different... I'm telling you, you couldn't believe the stories that, like, it was a different guy. I was just like, I don't care about Mr. Guzman. Forget about it. Halacha is out the window at this point. I was like, it can't be your makom kavua because somebody else kicked me out of this seat in this minyan last Shabbos and said it was their makom kavua. Guy goes, no, no, no. When I come to this shul, this is my makom kavua. At which one I was like, if that's the type of shul that this is, I don't want to daven here. I walked out. Yeah. So I'm saying, like, they're like, at a certain point, you're just like, I can't take it anymore. Like, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, people are just, and again, that's that Torah of it. Meaning, what is makom kavua? Where did it come from? And again, this is le'inyan. Where did makom kavua come from? It's learned out from Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu goes and he davens for stone, and then he goes back, he doesn't see it, and he goes back the next morning to the, it says in the Torah, he goes to the exact same place, and he davens again in the same place. And we learn from that, you should always daven in the same place, makom kavua. And I want to be like, I want it, not a shul rabbi, so I'm telling a bunch of people who are likely not going to fight over makom kavua in a shul. Though, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, there's still drama there also on Friday nights. You know, like, I want to be like, can you imagine? I just want to say, you, sir, who's so invested in your makom kavua, can you imagine Avraham Avinu, who's the forefather of Chesed, going up to, like, this spot of grass in the middle of Eretz Yisrael and going like, excuse me, sir, you're in my spot. Like, can you imagine Avraham saying that? And, like, we've come to, like, yes, there's a halacha of makom kavua, but that's the same tarot of Tov and Ra. So makom, this idea of makom kavua became status, stature, seniority, I pay dues, I donate to the shul, I deserve, meaning it went from, there's a halacha that you should daven in the same place because it enhances your tefillah, to, I'm a donor, how could you sit in my spot? And again, that's that either, whether you want to look at it as the Achi Esav of drawing it to the negative, whether you want to look at it as the Tarovet of Tovan Ra. My point is, even in things like that, this one which I'm personally, again, personally invested in and personally passionate about, fine. But in all areas of Torah and Halacha, all areas of Torah and Halacha, there's this Tarovet of Tovan Ra. And this ability, again, two different points. There's a Tarovet of Tovan Ra, and separately, an ability to take something Tov, and drag it into the Sitra Achar, drag it into the Yitzhar Labriyut. Meaning, again, it's something to really be cognizant of in Avodas Hashem. Doing the right thing, doing the mitzvah, doing Tov, does not mean that you've gotten there yet. And that's the thrust of this piece through and through. Let's see if we can finish up. Where are we up to? V'yish Lavim Bazeh. We're around 8 lines from the bottom. First line is Shezeh. Right column. This is the klipa of Esav. Iruv Tovan Ra. This Iruv of Tovan Ra, this joining together of Tovan Ra, this merging of Tovan Ra. Sham rakav mi beta kochot shel Tovan Ra, that it's the two kochot of Tovan Ra coming together. We already broke an hour. Nobody's listening to this one anyway. we passed the hour mark. So we're down to 5 hits. Right? That's what we've been saying. I'm saying I'm on the recording, so it's game over. I mean, now we can just, you know, there's no need to rush, because... No, there's no need to rush.
Cut out the whole redhead incident.
That's what we're going to call it, the redhead incident.
And then I'll put it under...
Yeah, I'm not... I don't think it was an incident, and we're not editing it out. The Yesh Lavin, Shezei Nan Klipat Esav, Eruv Tov Vara, that this connectivity, this merging of Tov Vara, Sheam Rekab Mi Betak Ochot Shal Tov Vara, that it's comprised of both Tov and Ra, Mi Makor Machtzavto, Hayabo Chilakato, V'chein Hayabo Yisod Hara. That's why almost every time in the Torah, he says every time in the Torah, that it says Esav, it also says Achi. It brings the two together. We know that Esav is his brother. Why does the Torah need to keep emphasizing that Esav is his brother? We know they're brothers. The messengers returned to Yaakov and said, Banu el Achi. El Esav, we came to your brother to Esav. Hare lo ayalo ela achechad. He only has one brother. Like, there were twins and that's it. He knows who his brother is. There was no confusion there. Top of the next column. Umadua ketiv el Esav. Why does it emphasize that it's both the aches Esav? El mishum shayab Esav vehin chelak tov shal achicha. There's the aspect of tov of achicha and the aspect of ra of Esav. And he is that merging of tov and ra. He is that worst klipa that there is, which is the tov and the ra mixed into one another, which is so much more dangerous, which is so much more challenging. And that's one of the reasons why, another layer of meaning to how Yitzchak loved Esav and thought Esav was the chosen of the two brothers. What did he see? Because when Yitzchak saw Esav, he only saw the Tov. He saw the Tov. The Tov was real. But he only saw the Tov. He didn't see the Ra on Esav, whether it was because he was unable to see it, he chose not to see it, or Esav being the liar of history, meaning the the seeds of falseness and lying in history. That's what Esav and Edom is. So whether that he managed to trick his father because that was his essence. Meaning if he was kulo ra, Yitzchak wouldn't have loved him. There would be nothing good to see in him. But Yitzchak saw the emes tiktov in Esav. But he missed the ra and missed the danger of the two of them together. And that's why Yaakov says, save me from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. From this klipa of this connectivity, of this joining together of Tov and Ra, which is the worst that there is. And that was also the great fear that Yaakov had. That he was told, that he was very afraid. Vayitzarlo, when he was distressed. Even though he'd already overcome Lavan, he already beat Lavan. Lavan, in the different piece, he talks about the uniqueness of the klipa of Yavan versus the uniqueness of the klipa of Esav. These two aspects of the klipa coming out in the form of Lavan and coming out in the form of Esav. He'd already beaten Lavan. He beat the tremendous klipa of Lavan. Asher b'kish lakor etakol, Lavan wanted to mamish destroy everything, as we say in the Haggadah. Lavan wanted to uproot all of Klal Yisrael. He wanted to destroy it from the inside out by destroying the Shalom Bayis of Yaakov, by marrying his two sisters, by trying to get into and destroy the Shalom Bayis of Klal Yisrael. I live with Lavan and I waited until now. Achkan v'yar Yaakov, why is he so afraid now? It didn't be Lavan. What is he so afraid of Esav for? That this klipa of the joining together of Tov and Ra, this is the worst of all. And this can destroy anything. It can destroy both machanot. That the Sfar HaKadoshim talk about, and we've talked about at length also outside of the text right now, about how dangerous and how damaging learning Torah is and doing Avodah Hashem is when you have pniot, when you're straying one way or to the other, when you're straying off of the Lishma path. When a person does an avera, then when a Jew lo alinu does an avera, they're giving a crown, so to speak, to the sitra acha. When a person does an avera, they're giving a crown to sitra acha. That's what they're doing. This crown that they're given to Yitzhara, it's of dirt and it's a disgusting, it's a dirty, disgusting crown that he's giving to him. It's an avera. Ach misha osik b'torah avoda imachshavot ra'ot areu mosar baze keter shel paz ufnim lesitra acha. Wow. Wow. He says that when a person, though, learns Torah or does the Avodas Hashem with negative intent for all the wrong reasons that we talked about, he says that's much, much worse. He says then you're giving a crown of gold and jewels to the Sitra Achra. It's really wild the way he frames it. When you do an Aver, okay, so you throw him a bone. When you let him take your Torah and Avodah, you're giving a crown of gold and of pearls to the Sitra Achra. V'arei zeh pegam yoter gadol, and that's a much, much, much worse damage to do. And the koach of Yaakov was that he overcame the koach of Ra with the koach of Tov. And even the Ra within the Tov, mixed into the Tov, he overcame with the koach of Tov. That he struggled with godliness and with people, and he overcame all the challenges and managed to bring out the good in everything to overcome Tov versus Ra, and even the Ra within the Tov. B'ezrat Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless us that we should be able to constantly see the good from the bad, to choose the good, to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu both completely spiritually, and also when we reach the physical world, to be able to fully serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu within the context of the physical world, utilizing physical things for spiritual ends, and to make sure that there's no tarovet of Ra within our Tov, that there are no pniot, that there's no moving over into a negative path when we do Tov, that there's no tarovet of Tov and Ra, that we live a life of Kulo Tov, and that through being Kulo Tov, we fulfill the positive side of the Amar HaZal that we quoted, and bring the Geula by being a people of Kulotov. There's Hashem by all of us. Mm-hmm.